Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Researchers from the University of Queensland, the Woolcock Institute, Liverpool Hospital, and the University of New South Wales decided to figure out what proportion of the national childhood asthma burden was associated with damp housing and gas stove emissions. Their research is published in the MJA and is open access at mja.com.au. One of the authors, Dr. Luke Nibbs, a senior lecturer in environmental health at the University of Queensland, is my special guest on the pod today. Why did this research need doing? What was the gap in the knowledge, and why did you think it needed doing?
Even in countries with a pretty pleasant climate like Australia, we spend about 80 to 90% of our lives indoors. So the quality of the air we breathe when we're indoors is quite important for health. And that's often overlooked, but the international literature reminds us that these indoor exposures are very important. And that's particularly true for children because they breathe more air relative to their body size than adults. And they also have, fairly immature respiratory and immune systems. I guess that an interesting aspect of this topic is that there was a lot of great Australian studies on indoor air quality and children's respiratory health that were done during the 1990s and early 2000s. And I think those Australian studies are probably some of the best in the international literature. And I can say that in my humble opinion because I wasn't involved in any of them. To my reading at least, the topic's sort of fallen off the radar a bit in recent years, but the problem hasn't gone away. And, all of those studies that were done were based on a specific geographic location or a specific group of participants. So what we wanted to do was to try and estimate what that all means for the national asthma burden in children and how much of that burden is associated with two common indoor exposures. So we looked at damp housing, and we looked at gas stove emissions. And in doing that, our main motivation was to assess to what extent reducing exposure to those two indoor sources might reduce childhood asthma.
Let's talk a little bit about the physiology of what's going on. How does dampness affect asthma or cause asthma?
The mechanisms are not well documented or well understood.
Okay.
The epidemiological literature on this topic does suggest a few pathways or processes that might be involved. And for dampness, basically damp building materials support fungi and bacteria growth to a greater extent than non-damp surfaces, and their spores and metabolites and other things that they produce can suppress immunity and promote inflammation, and that can occur in people with or without allergy. Dust mites also, I think, tend to prefer damper rather than drier places. So all of those are potential mechanisms that might be involved. But also, damp building products themselves. So, if your walls or your building products or the timber gets wet, it can release volatile organic compounds into the air, and they're known to be respiratory irritants also. The thing with dampness is there's probably no single component of dampness which is likely to explain all of the health effects, which is why this kind of broad umbrella term of dampness is used so often in the literature, because it captures all of those complex things that might be going on.
What is it about gas stove emissions? What's in a gas stove emission?
Gas combustion emits several pollutants, probably the most notable of which are nitrogen dioxide, formaldehyde, and also ultrafine particles, so very, very small particles, less than 100 nanometers in size. And this has been pretty well known for several decades now, at least in terms of NO2 and formaldehyde. And for ultrafine particles, probably in the last 20 years, we've been seeing this also. Mm-hmm. So the indoor levels of those pollutants, when you've got a gas appliance running, can be substantially higher than the outdoor levels. And those pollutants that I just mentioned, and also the kind of broader mixture of pollutants that they are a sort of proxy for, I suppose, are associated with the inflammatory effect in the LA. And the mechanism that seems to pop up over and over with air pollutants is oxidative stress. And again, for both dampness and gas stoves, a lot of the evidence is from the epidemiological studies, which they suggest associations, but don't often delve or address the mechanisms. So I think there's a definite need for additional research specifically focused on mechanisms, and then hopefully that will go some way as well to formulating strategies to reduce exposure and reduce the burden.
Tell us a little bit about the methodology for your research.
So we did a modelling-based study using the comparative risk assessment approach, which basically is a fancy way of saying we tried to estimate how many people, or how many children rather, are exposed to these two sources, dampness mm-hmm. and gas stoves. We tried to estimate the likely health effects as far as asthma goes, among children who are exposed compared to those who aren't exposed. And we then used that to try and estimate what proportion then of the total burden of asthma in children is attributable to those two sources of exposure. And another way of looking at that, and probably the more technically correct way of expressing that, is, you know, the thing we were trying to estimate was how much of the asthma burden could be averted if we were to remove those sources of exposure completely.
Right.
Wave a magic wand and overnight there were yes. no damp houses, no gas stoves. What percentage reduction, if we saw it immediately,
yes.
Would we expect to see in the burden of asthma?
And what were your major results?
We started off by doing a literature review to try and work out approximately what proportion of homes in Australia have dampness problems.
Mm-hmm.
That was the sort of first step. And through doing that, we estimated that about 25% of Australian dwellings have dampness problems.
Yes.
And we then used some very good national Australian Bureau of Statistics survey data on gas stoves, which showed that 38% of dwellings use natural gas for cooking. So they're both fairly common, both mm-hmm. damp housing and gas stoves. So by then taking those numbers, we estimated that about 8% of
yes.
the childhood asthma burden could be averted if we eliminated damp housing. And we also found that about 12% could be eliminated if gas stoves were replaced with something else. But interestingly, we also estimated that the burden for gas stoves would drop from 12% to about 3% if they were all fitted with high efficiency range hoods. So range hoods that we're all pretty familiar with, but these high efficiency ones are particularly good at capturing the gas and particle emissions and venting them outdoors rather than just sort of recycling them and blowing them around the indoor space. So I also hasten to add that replacing gas stoves wouldn't remove this problem entirely, as you know, all cooking produces emissions, and electricity is hardly a clean source of energy in many parts of Australia.
Yeah.
So a lot of the power generation for electricity in Australia comes from burning coal, and that contributes to outdoor air pollution. So I don't think we were particularly surprised by these results.
Right.
Only because people that work in environmental exposures and environmental epidemiology know that the individual level risks or effects are generally pretty small, but the proportion of people exposed is generally pretty large. So when you add up all of those small effects
yeah.
across the population, the sum can be large. And we do see the same sort of thing in our work on outdoor air pollution. And like outdoor air pollution, the indoor exposures that we've looked at here, they're probably not the big ticket contributor to childhood asthma, but they are fairly ubiquitous, and
yes.
they're probably always sort of sitting in the background exerting some varying role. Indoor exposures are potentially preventable. The extent, again, is going to vary quite a bit depending on which exposure you're looking at and the sort of socioeconomic and other capability of individuals and governments too to implement strategies to reduce exposure. But I think even if they're not 100% preventable,
yes,
I think there's definitely simple ways that the exposures can be reduced. So even if we can't eliminate them, I think we can definitely get them lower. And the flip side is that the strategies to do that are generally fairly straightforward and things that everyone can do.
Such as?
So ventilation is really important, as mm-hmm. we sort of touched on earlier. I mean, the whole point of the range hood is to ventilate or vent the gas combustion products
yeah.
away from the indoor space, particularly the range hoods that vent the emissions outdoors, as I said earlier, rather than just recirculating them and blowing them back into the room.
Yes.
So ventilation with fresh air is key. And new buildings these days have become increasingly airtight to improve energy efficiency, which is good, obviously,
yes. Yes.
as far as greenhouse gas emissions and energy requirements go. But the flip side is that the airtightness, when you have an indoor source, can lead to quite high build-up of indoor pollutants. And so ventilation is often lower in these newer dwellings than it is in the older houses. And the simple measure to improve ventilation is just to open a window whenever you're cooking or using a dryer, for example, mm-hmm. indoors, and ideally opening more than one window on opposite sides of the space, trying to get some cross-ventilation, moving across the indoor area. I generally say to people, if you're introducing something to the indoor air of your house, whether it's the gas stove emissions or the moisture from the dryer, or in days gone by, not so much now, people smoking, obviously, try to do something to speed up the removal of that stuff that's getting added to the indoor air. And you know, the open windows is the simplest solution for that, and one that's been around for a long time and mm-hmm. it still works pretty well.
Yes.
The slight caveat on that is that it probably doesn't apply to the same extent if you live on a very busy road or have other pollutant sources outside. So,
yes.
Again, you want to end up with a scenario where the indoor air is better than or at least the same as the outdoor air when it's not near a source. And if it is near a source, you might need to look at a slightly more sophisticated strategy.
Yes, yes. Is dampness more difficult to deal with?
It can be, particularly if it's entrenched.
Yeah.
And I'm not an expert in dampness remediation, but I'm aware that there's a lot of companies and people who specialise in remediating dwellings that have extensive problems with dampness, and it can get expensive and quite complicated.
Mm.
I think the thing with dampness is that the common factor, and this is maybe a bit of an oversimplification, but the common factor is water or water vapor getting where it shouldn't,
yes,
and not being able to dry, leading to increased microbial growth and fungi and the other things I mentioned. That's not really confined to any particular kind of building stock or geography. It can happen anywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's entrenched, it can be quite difficult to deal with. So simple measures like not using dryers indoors. If you have a dryer and you have capacity to put it somewhere, maybe, you know, under the house or in a shed or in the garage or something like that, that can be a simple measure to reduce indoor dampness. Dehumidifiers can also be used if for houses that have problems, persistent problems
yes.
with moisture. All of these things can cost a bit of money, but in the scheme of things, they're not overly complicated or overly expensive. We looked at these two because they fit a variety of selection criteria that we imposed on our study, but that's not to say that this is the sort of be-all and end-all mm-hmm. of indoor exposures. So gas heaters, obviously, are another source. We didn't look at them, but it has much the same effects as the gas stoves, and there's some technical reasons I won't go into for why we didn't look at gas heaters.
Sure.
But beyond just gas emissions and dampness, there are multifactorial sources of indoor air pollution. And again, as I said at the top of the interview, the topic has kind of fallen off the radar a bit in recent years in Australia. And with this tightening of new dwellings and increased air tightness, I think it's probably time to step back and develop a strategy for what would deliver the sort of most benefit as far as future research on this topic goes, because there's so many ways it could go. I think the main problem is going to be just drawing a fence around it and picking the most important issue. And, you know, then too, looking at interventions and following people over time to look at whether things like range hoods or remediating damp lead to improvements in health. Ideally, that would be done in a sort of longitudinal context where people could be followed over several years. And that would give the highest level of evidence. So I think there's plenty that can be done. The big problem is narrowing it down to the most important. I think public awareness and public education for this topic has an important role to play, because the message is generally pretty clear. And the good news is that there are simple measures to reduce exposure and that ventilation with fresh air is very important, as I mentioned earlier. And how best to disseminate this information is something we're going to discuss with our colleagues in state and federal government and professional societies and not-for-profit agencies focused on respiratory health, and coming up with simple ways to get that message across and providing people with the resources that they need to try and improve the indoor air quality in their home. I think that's the next priority for us. I know talking to clinician colleagues of mine, it's not something that's always easy, because it's not the most widely covered thing in a lot of medical education, both in initial education and ongoing education. It probably doesn't get a lot of attention. But just being aware of the diverse sources of indoor air pollution, the fact that this isn't some sort of trivial academic interest. This is a real demonstrably important problem, not just in Australia, but globally. There is a substantial weight of high quality epidemiological literature on these topics. And just, I think that sort of general awareness and ability to ask questions about likely sources of exposure may go some way to sort of furthering the dialogue between the doctor and patient, and then trying to formulate ways to reduce that, because as we've heard, the reduction, at least at the simplest level, the measures to reduce exposure are fairly simple and things that people can do themselves, or if they want to expend a bit of money and put in a high efficiency range hood, that's a bit more difficult and imposes a financial burden, but it's, again, in the scheme of things, it's not that expensive.
Thanks, Luke.
Thanks, Kate. I appreciate that.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.